The president will receive the domestic minister at once.
Delighted to see you, Mrs. Lutestring.
Honored by your celestial presence.
Good day, madam.
I have not had the pleasure of meeting you before. I am the Archbishop of York.
Surely we have met, Mr. Archbishop. I remember your face. I remember now. It was someone else.
Are you sure you are mistaken? I also have some association with your face, Mrs. Lutestring. Something like a door opening continually and revealing you, and a smile of welcome when you recognize me. Did you ever open a door for me, I wonder?
I often opened a door for the person you have just reminded me of, but he has been dead many years.
May I ask how many years?
It does not matter. A long time.
You mustn't rush to conclusions about the Archbishop, Mrs. Lutestring. He's an older bird than you think. Older than you, at all events.
I think not, Mr. President. But the subject is a delicate one. I had rather not pursue it.
Have you, Mr. Archbishop, any ground for assuming, as you seem to do, that what has happened to you has not happened to other people as well?
Yes, by George, I never thought of that.
I have never met any case but my own.
How do you know?
Well, no one has ever told me that they were in this extraordinary position.
That proves nothing. Did you ever tell anybody that you were in it? You never told us. Why did you never tell us?
I'm surprised at the question coming from so astute a mind as yours, Mr. Secretary. When you reached the age I reached before I discovered what was happening to me, I was old enough to know and fear the ferocious hatred with which human animals, like all other animals, turn upon any unhappy individual who has the misfortune to be unlike themselves.
If there were others like you, had they not the same reason for keeping the secret?
That is true, but I should know. You short-lived people are so childish. If I met a man of my own age, I should recognize him at once. I have never done so.
Would you recognize a woman of your age, do you think? What is your age, Mr. Archbishop?
283, he says. It's his little joke. Do you know, Mrs. Lutestring, he'd almost talked us into believing him when you came in and cleared the air with your robust common sense.
Do you really feel that, Mr. President? I hear the note of breezy assertion in your voice. I miss the note of conviction.
No, look here. Let us stop talking damn nonsense. I don't wish to be disagreeable, but it's getting on my nerves. The best joke won't bear being pushed beyond a certain point. That point's been reached. I'm rather busy this morning. We all have our hands pretty full. Confucius here will tell you that I have a heavy day before me.
Have you anything more important than this thing, if it's true?
Oh, if it's true? But it isn't true.
Have you anything at all to do?
Anything to do? Well, have you forgotten, Barnabas, that I happen to be president and that the weight of the entire public business of this country is on my shoulders?
Has he anything to do, Confucius?
He has to be president.
That means he has nothing to do.
No. Very well, Barnabas. Go on, making a fool of yourself. Go on.
I am not going to leave this room until we get to the bottom of this swindle.
This what did you say?
These expressions cannot be sustained. You obscure the discussion in using them.
Oh, well, this unnatural horror, would that satisfy you?
That is in order. But we do not commit ourselves to the implications of the word horror.
By the word horror, the Accountant General means only something unusual.
I notice that the Honorable Domestic Minister, on learning the advanced age of the Venerable Prelate, shows no signs of surprise or incredulity.
But she doesn't take it seriously. Who would? Hey, Mrs. Lutestring?
I take it very seriously indeed, Mr. President. I see now that I was not mistaken first. I have met the Archbishop before.
I felt sure of it. This vision of a door opening to me and a woman's face welcoming me must be a reminiscence of something that really happened, though I see it now as an angel opening the gate of heaven.
Or a parlour maid opening the door of the house of the young woman you were in love with?
Is that the reality? How these things grow in our imagination. But may I say, Mrs. Lutestring, that the transfiguration of a parlour maid to an angel is not more amazing than her transfiguration to the very dignified and able domestic minister I am addressing. I recognize the angel in you. Frankly, I do not recognize the parlourmaid.
What is a parlourmaid?
I was a parlourmaid in the house of one of the Accountant General's remote ancestors. You asked me my age, Mr. Chief Secretary. I am 274.
Well, you don't look it. But you really, really don't look it.
Look again, Mr. President.
Yes. Yes, you do look it. I am convinced. It's true. Now call up the lunatic asylum, Confucius, and tell them to send an ambulance for me.
Why have you given away your secret, our secret?
They found it out. The cinema records betrayed me. But I never dreamt that there were others. Did you?
I knew one other. She was a cook. She grew tired and killed herself.
Dear me. However, her death simplifies the situation, as I've been able to convince these gentlemen that the matter had better go no further.
What? When the President knows, we'll be all over the place before the end of the week.
Really, Mrs. Lutestring, you speak as if I were a notoriously indiscreet person. Barnabas, have I such a reputation?
It can't be helped. It's constitutional.
It is utterly unconstitutional. But as you say, it cannot be helped.
I deny that a secret of state has ever passed my lips. Except perhaps to the Minister of Health, who is discretion personified. People think, because she's a negress...
It does not matter much now. Once it would have mattered a great deal. But my children are all dead.
Yes, the children must have been a terrible difficulty. Fortunately for me, I had none.
There was one daughter, who was the child of my very heart. Some years after my first drowning, I learnt that she had lost her sight. I went to her. She was an old woman of 96, blind. She asked me to sit and talk with her, because my voice was like the voice of her dead mother.
Well, the complications must be frightful. Really, I hardly know whether I do want to live much longer than other people.
You can always kill yourself, as Cook did, but that was influenza. Long life is complicated and even terrible, but it is glorious all the same. I would no more change places with an ordinary woman than with a mayfly that lives only a day.
What set you thinking of it first?
Conrad Barnabas's book. Your wife told me it was more wonderful than Napoleon's Book of Fate and Old Moore's Almanac, which Cook and I used to read. I was very ignorant. It did not seem so impossible to me as to an educated woman. Yet I forgot all about it, and married and drudged as a poor man's wife, and brought up children and looked 20 years older than I really was. Until one day, long after my husband died and my children were out in the world working for themselves, I noticed that I looked 20 years younger than I really was. The truth came to me in a flash.
Oh, an amazing moment. Your feelings must have been beyond description. What was your first thought?
Pure terror. I saw that the little money I had laid up would not last, and that I must go out and work again. They had things called old age pensions then, miserable pittances for worn-out old labourers to die on. I thought I should be found out if I went on drawing it too long. The horror of facing another lifetime of drudgery, of missing my hard-earned rest and losing my poor little savings, drove everything else out of my mind.
No wonder you did not kill yourself. I often wonder why the poor in those evil old times did not kill themselves. They did not even kill other people.
You never kill yourself, because you always may as well wait until tomorrow. And you have not energy nor conviction enough to kill the others. Besides, how can you blame them when you would do as they do if you were in their place?
Devilish poor consolation, that.
There were other consolations in those days for people like me. We drank preparations of alcohol to relieve the strain of living and give us artificial happiness.
Oh, alcohol!
A little alcohol would improve your temper and manners and make you much easier to live with, Mr. Accountant General.
Oh. By George, I believe you. Oh, try it, Barnabas. Oh.
But when I stopped working and lived on my pension, the fatigue of my life's drudgery began to wear off because, you see, I was not really old. I recuperated. I looked younger and younger. And at last, I was rested enough to have courage and strength to begin life again. Besides, political changes were making it easier. Life was a little better worth living for the 9/10 of the people who used to be mere drudges. After that, I never turned back nor faltered. My only regret now is that I shall die when I am 300 or thereabouts. There is only one thing that made life hard, and that is gone now.
May we ask what that was?
Perhaps you will all be offended if I tell you.
Offended? My dear lady, do you suppose after such a stupendous revelation that anything short of a blow from a sledgehammer could produce the smallest impression on any of us?
Mm-hmm. Hmm? Well, you see, it has been so hard on me never to meet a grown-up person. You are all such children. And I was never very fond of children, except that one girl who woke up the mother passion in me. I have been very lonely sometimes.
Oh, but surely, Mrs. Lutzring, that has been your own fault. If I may say so, a lady of your attractions need never have been lonely.
Why?
He means that you might have married. Curious how little they understand our position.
I did marry. I married again on my 101st birthday. But of course I had to marry an elderly man. A man over 60.
But why had you to marry an elderly man? Why not marry a young one? Or should I say a middle-aged one? Well, if my own affections were not already engaged, and if... Well, to tell the truth, I was not a little afraid of you. You are a very superior woman, as we all acknowledge. I should esteem myself happy in...
Mr. President, have you ever tried to take advantage of the innocence of a little child for the gratification of your senses?
Hang it all. What do you take me for? I mean, what right have you to ask me such a question?
I am at present in my 275th year. You suggest that I should take advantage of the innocence of a child of 30 and marry it?
Can you short-lived people not understand that as the confusion and immaturity and primitive animalism in which we live for the first 100 years of our life is worse in this matter of sex than any other, you are intolerable to this and that relation?
Do you mean to say, Mrs. Lutzring, that you regard me as a child?
Do you expect me to regard you as a completed soul? When I think of the blessings that have been showered on you and contrast them with the poverty, the humiliations, the anxieties, the heartbreak, the insolence and tyranny which were the daily lot of mankind when I was learning to suffer instead of learning to live. When I see how lightly you take it all, how you quarrel over the crumpled leaves in your bed of roses... How you are so dainty about your work, but unless it is made either interesting or delightful to you, you leave it to the negresses and Chinamen. I ask myself whether even 300 years of thought and experience can save you from being superseded by the power that created you and put you on your trial.
My dear lady, our Chinese and coloured friends are perfectly happy. They're 20 times better off here than they would be in China or Liberia. They do their work admirably, and in doing it, they set us free for higher employments.
What higher employments are you capable of? You that are superannuated at 70 and dead at 80.
You are not really doing higher work. You are supposed to make the decisions and give the orders, but the negresses and the Chinese make up your minds for you and tell you what orders to give. Just as my brother, who was a sergeant in the guards, used to prompt his officers in the old days. When I want to get anything done at the Health Ministry, I do not come to you. I go to the Black Lady, who has been the real president during your present term of office, or to Confucius, who goes on forever while presidents come and presidents go.
Now, this is outrageous. This is treason to the white race. And let me tell you, madam, I've never in my life met the Minister of Health, and that I protest against the vulgar colour prejudice which disparages her great ability and her eminent services to the state. Now, My relations with her are purely telephonic, gramophonic, photophonic, and may I add, platonic.
There is no reason why you should be ashamed of them in any case, Mr. President, but let us look at the position impersonally. Can you deny that what is happening is that the English people have become a joint stock company admitting Asiatics and Africans as shareholders?
Nothing like it. I know all about the old joint stock companies. Their shareholders did no work.
As president, I must not listen to unpatriotic criticisms of our national character, Mr. Archbishop.
As Archbishop, Mr. President, it is my official duty to criticise the national character unsparingly. We are letting all the power slip into the hands of coloured people. In another 100 years, we shall simply be their household pets. Either we shall go under as greybeards with golf clubs in our hands, or we must will to live longer.
Yes, that's it. I could not have expressed it in words, but you have expressed it for me. I know now that it took me a whole century to grow up. I began my serious life when I was 120. Asiatics cannot control me. I am not a child in their hands, as you are, Mr. President. Neither, I am sure, is the Archbishop. They respect me. You are not grown up enough even for that, though you were kind enough to say that I frighten you.
Honestly, you do. Will you think me very rude if I say that if I must choose between a white woman old enough to be my great-grandmother and a black woman of my own age, I should probably find the black woman more sympathetic. Yeah.
And more attractive in colour, perhaps?
Yes, since you ask me. More. Well, not more attractive. I do not deny that you have an excellent appearance, but I will say richer. Yes, more Venetian. Say, tropical. The shadowed livery of the burnished sun.
Our women and their favourite story writers begin already to talk about men with golden complexions.
Ah.
Well, what of it, madam? Have you read a very interesting book by the librarian of the Biological Society suggesting that the future of the world lies with the mulatto?
Mr. Archbishop, if the white race is to be saved, our destiny is apparent.
Yes, our destiny is pretty clear.
Have you time to come home with me and discuss the matter?
With pleasure.
No, you don't. Birch, you understand, don't you?
No, what is it?
These two are going to marry.
Oh, why shouldn't they if they want to?
They don't want to. They will do it in cold blood because their children were dead 300 years. It mustn't be allowed.
You cannot prevent it. There is no law that gives you power to interfere with them.
If they force me to it, I will obtain legislation against marriages above the age of 78.
There is not time for that before we are married, Mr. Accountant General.
There is time to send the lady to the lethal chamber before anything comes of your marriage. Don't forget that.
What nonsense, Mr. Accountant General. Good afternoon, Mr. President. Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Secretary.
I'm surprised at you, Mr. Barnabas. Your tone was like an echo from the Dark Ages.
Thieves! Cursed thieves! Vampires! What are you going to do, Birch?
Do?
Yes, do! There must be dozens of these people in existence. Are you going to let them do what the two who have just left us mean to do? And crowd us off the face of the earth?
Oh, come, Barnabas, what harm are they doing? I mean, aren't you interested in them? Don't you like them?
Like them? I hate them. They are monsters, unnatural monsters. They are poison to me.
What possible objection can there be to their living as long as they can? It does not shorten our lives, does it?
If I have to die when I am 78, I don't see why another man should be privileged to live to be 278.
But what can we do to them?
Kill them.
Oh, nonsense.
I would lock them up then. Sterilize them somehow, anyhow.
But what reason could we give?
What reason can you give for killing a snake? Nature tells you to do it.
My dear Barnabas, you are out of your mind.
Haven't you said that once too often already this morning?
I don't believe you will carry a single soul with you.
I understand. I know you. You think you are one of them.
Mr. Accountant General, you may be one of them.
How dare you accuse me of such a thing? I am an honest man, not a monster. I won my place in public life by demonstrating that the true expectation of human life is 78.6. And I will resist any attempt to alter or upset it to the last drop of my blood if need be.
Come, pull yourself together.
You will regret it if you do.
What is to make me regret it?
Every mortal man and woman in the community will begin to count on living for 3 centuries. Things will happen which you do not foresee. Terrible things. The family will dissolve. Parents and children will be no longer the old and the young. Brothers and sisters will meet as strangers after 100 years' separation. The ties of blood will lose their innocence. The imaginations of men let loose over the possibilities of 3 centuries of life will drive them mad and wreck human society. This discovery must be kept a dead secret.
And if I refuse to keep the secret?
I shall have you safe in a lunatic asylum the day after you blab.
You forget that I can produce the Archbishop to prove my statement.
So can I. Which of us do you think he will support when I explain to him that your object in revealing his age is to get him killed?
Bert, are you going to back up this yellow abomination against me? Are we public men and members of the government? Or are we damned blackguards?
Have you ever known a public man who was not what vituperative people call a damned blackguard when some inconsiderate person wanted to tell the public more than was good for it?
Hold your tongue, you insolent heathen. Burge, I spoke to you.
Well, you know, my dear Barnabas, Confucius is a very long-headed chap. I see his point.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Then let me tell you that, except officially, I will never speak to you again. Do you hear?
You will. You will.
And don't you ever dare to speak to me again. Do you hear?
I will. I will. Goodbye, Barnabas. God bless you.
May you live forever and be the laughingstock of the whole world.
Oh, he'll keep the secret all right. I know Barnabas. You needn't worry.
There are no secrets except the secrets that keep themselves. Consider, there are those films at the record office. We have no power to prevent the master of the records from publishing this discovery made in his department. We cannot silence the American. Who can silence an American? Not the people who were there today to receive him. Fortunately, a video can prove nothing but a resemblance.
That's very true. After all, the whole thing is confounded nonsense, isn't it?
You have decided not to believe it now that you realize its inconveniences. That is the English method. It may not work in this case.
English be hanged. It's common sense. You know, those two people got us hypnotized. Not a doubt of it. Yeah, they must have been kidding us. They were, weren't they?
You looked into that woman's face, and you believed.
Yeah, just so. Yes, that's where she had me. I shouldn't have believed her a bit if she turned her back to me. Do you really think...
The Archbishop is an adult. When I was a child, I was dominated and intimidated by people whom I now know to have been weaker and sillier than I, because there was some mysterious quality in their mere age that overawed me. I confess that, though I have kept up appearances, I have always been afraid of the Archbishop. It is this that convinced me. It was this in the woman's face that convinced you. Their new departure in the history of the race is no fraud. It doesn't even surprise me.
Oh, come. Not surprise you? It's your pose never to be surprised at anything. But if you're not surprised at this, you're not human.
I am staggered, just as a man may be staggered by an explosion for which he has himself laid the charge and lighted the fuse. But I am not surprised, because, as a philosopher and a student of evolutionary biology, I have come to regard some such development as this as inevitable. If I had not thus prepared myself to be credulous, no mere evidence of films and well-told tales would have persuaded me to believe. As it is, I do believe.
Oh. Well, that being settled, what the devil's going to happen next? I mean, what's the next move for us?
We do not make the next move. The next move will be made by the Archbishop and the woman.
Their marriage?
More than that. They have made the momentous discovery that they are not alone in the world.
Well, you think there are others?
There must be many others. Each of them believes that he or she is the only one to whom the miracle has happened. But the Archbishop knows better now. He will advertise in terms which only the long-lived people will understand. He will bring them together and organize them. They will hasten from all parts of the earth. They will become a great power.
Oh. Oh, I say, will they? Oh, I suppose they will. Oh, I wonder, is Barnabas right after all? Ought we to allow it?
Nothing that we can do will stop it. We cannot in our souls really want to stop it. The vital force that has produced this change would paralyze our opposition to it, if we were mad enough to oppose. But we will not oppose. You and I may be of the elect, too.
Yes. That's what gets us every time. What the deuce ought we to do? Something must be done about it, you know.
Let us sit still and meditate in silence on the vistas before us.
My George. Yeah, I believe you're right. Yeah, let us.
Mr. President.
Oh, my dear Madam Health Minister.
Avaunt. Avaunt.
Are you at home?
No, I'm at Fishguard Bay. Why not run over and join me for the afternoon? I am disposed to be approachable at last.
but Fishguard, it's 270 miles.
There is a lightning express on the Irish Air Service at 16:30. They will drop you by a parachute in the bay. The dip will do you good. I will pick you up and dry you and give you a first-rate time.
Oh, delightful. It's a little risky, isn't it?
Risky? I thought you were afraid of nothing.
No, I'm not exactly afraid, but...
But you think it is not good enough. Very well.
No, stop! Oh, let me explain. Hold the line for just a moment. Oh, please.
Well,
the fact is, I've been behaving very recklessly for some time past, under the impression that my life would be so short that it was not worth bothering about. But, I've just learnt that I may live, much longer than I expected. Now, I'm sure your good sense will tell you that this alters this case.
Quite. Pray don't risk your precious life on my account. Sorry for troubling you. Goodbye.
No, please hold on. I can convince you. Engaged. Oh, who is she calling up now? The Chief Secretary. Say I want to see him again just for a moment.
Is the woman gone?
Yes, it's all right. Just a moment, if... Confucius, I have some important business at Fishguard. The Irish Air Service can drop me in the bay by parachute. I suppose it's quite safe, isn't it?
Nothing is quite safe. The Air Service is as safe as any other travelling service. The parachute is safe, but the water is not safe.
Oh, why? They'll give me an unsinkable tunic, won't they?
You will not sink, but the sea is very cold. You may get rheumatism for life.
Oh, for life? Oh, that settles it. I won't risk it.
Good. You have at last become prudent. You are no longer what you call a sportsman. You are a sensible coward, almost a grown-up man. I congratulate you.
Well, coward or no coward, I will not face 300 years of rheumatism for any woman that ever was born. I'm going home. Yes. Good evening.
So early? If the Minister of Health rings you up, what shall I tell her?
Tell her to go to the devil!
Oh, no. Oh, these crude young civilizations, their manners, aunts!